Welcome to the Disciple Making Leader Podcast, your resource for exploring the world of disciple making and leadership within the church. Discover Jesus' strategy for raising up leaders, growing the church, and multiplying a movement. Let's jump into today's episode and explore the power of a disciple making leader.
Welcome to another episode of the Disciple Making Leader Podcast. I'm your host for today and the executive director of Disciple First. And we are a ministry that really is just about encouraging local church pastors, local church leaders to make and multiply disciples like Jesus. And we're super excited that you're joining us today on this podcast. And really excited because we got a fun room today. We've got some guys that are a lot of fun. We've got a lot of good disciple-making leaders sitting in the room today. As always, our faithful co-host, contributor, pastor, friend, preacher, Craig Etheridge.
Keep it going. Keep it
just
going.
Keep it going. Yeah.
Thank you, Brother Ben.
Doctor.
Dr. Reverend.
He's got lots of names.
All the titles.
All the titles. Yeah. Just string them out there.
His favorite is preacher from his grandkids.
That's right. So, that's what they call me.
That's the best one. So, Craig, thanks for being on today.
You bet.
Yeah. And so we're excited to really dive in. We've got Cameron Bundy, who is, well, I'll let you introduce. What is your role here at Cross Creek Church?
Yeah, so I don't have all the titles that Craig has, right? I'm trying to catch up to him. I don't have all of them yet, but I'm the pastor of adult ministry, so I oversee all the connect groups at the church and church membership and oversee a lot of different ministries in our adult area. So I wear multiple hats.
Yeah, and you're also, just, you know, if you didn't have enough to do, you also help us train, coach, do podcasts.
Oh, yeah.
And you do an excellent job at it. We're thankful that you're on the Disciple First team of trainers.
I'm glad you just acknowledge I do a really good job. I've been wondering.
Yeah. Hey, we'll jump in. And you know what? Since, you know, is this your first podcast that you've done with us?
It's the first one.
First one. So this is your inaugural podcast. So we have a fresh Topo Chico here. So we're going to do a little click. We're going to click.
Clinking the glasses.
Wow. Come on, Ben, get over here.
Anybody that's seen Despicable Me has kids, clinking. You can make the clinking noises.
Yep. That's right. Welcome to the podcast, Cameron. Good to have you here.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you for being here, too, taking time. But I think, really, conversation today, I think, is super applicable to everybody. And, you know, most of the time, that's what we want to do. We do want it very relatable and hands-on. But, you know, you're speaking from a seat where you're right in the middle of this conversation. This isn't theory. This isn't things that, you know, hey, you read in a book or you wrote a book, like, you know, Craig wrote a book. But we're actually dealing with these things and fleshing these issues out in the local church.
Yeah.
And so we're just going to talk about, really today, about how you can help your ministry grow and scale up. And if you've listened in the past, we've talked in episode one about a specific type of leader, and that, or a leadership level, and that was a leader of leaders. And that's really what we're going to discuss today. Craig, why are those so important?
Well, you know, in every ministry, you have to constantly scale up in order for the ministry to grow. And part of that scaling up is developing more leaders around you that can help shoulder the load. I think back to Jethro's advice to Moses, right? Yeah. That Moses was doing everything. He was listening to every case. He was making every decision. And Jethro said, you're killing yourself and you're killing all of us because there's not enough of you to go around. And so you've got to choose men that are over, you know, certain amounts, 50s, 100s, you know, thousands, and get these leaders around you so that you can spread the load of work. And I think that is exactly great advice for the local church. You know, we've got a lot of leaders that are burned out, a lot of leaders that are trying to do everything. And what they're missing are these emerging leaders around them. Now, I can already hear somebody say, well, Craig, obviously I need more leaders. If they would just join my church, that would be awesome, you know, because then they could join them in. I was like, oh, great, you do that and then go do this. But the problem is many times they're not going to join your church. And so you have to develop those leaders yourself. And that's where it gets a little sticky, because how do I do that? How do I develop these leaders? And so we've already done a full episode on leaders of leaders, and I really encourage you to go back. If what we're talking about here today interests you, go back to that previous episode, because we really kind of unpack that. That is a part of the Disciple Making Leader book that we have put out, and of course, that's a great resource for you as well. But today, we're going to kind of refresh that, what is a leader of leaders, and then we're going to talk about how does this actually play out in a specific ministry of your church, which many of that are listening have this ministry. We're going to talk about adult group ministry. How does the leader of leaders play out in that? So very, very poignant, important conversation. So you asked me the question, what is a leader of leaders? And so let me just say very simply that a leader of leaders is maybe the missing ingredient in most churches. You have you got volunteers for everybody. That's kind of level one. And then level two is like you have team leaders, people that oversee volunteers. And then usually in a typical church, that jumps up to staff members or what we call divisional leaders that oversee all the team leads. And you say, yeah, that's right. Well, in a certain size, that's okay because you may only have four or five. But when those four or five team leaders turn to 10 to 20 to 50, then all of a sudden there's no way one person can oversee all those team leads. Yep. And that's when you know you need this, the secret bullet, right? You need this special, what I call the expander joint. You got to have this leader that steps in and called a leader of leaders. And this leader of leaders actually oversees multiple team leads, but also works under the direction of a divisional leader. And this is the missing ingredient for growth. And maybe the reason why your ministry is not growing is because you don't have these key leaders of leaders.
Yeah, and I do think, you know, you had said, hey, when an organization gets to a certain size, but I do think you can think in every, well, like if we have a listener out here that's, hey, we're in a church of 50 and I'm the only staff member, I do think this is scalable. The principles we're talking about are going to be scalable to this person because a leader of leaders could be you have two Sunday schools and you need to have a leader of leaders that's helping you direct those Sunday school leaders and, yep, and that. So I think even if a pastor is sitting there by himself, these are important principles that they're not carrying the load by themselves. That's the danger, that some leader, whether they're a department leader or over a whole organization, is carrying everything by themselves. And that because it reduces the span of care, communication is lacking, people aren't being developed. And again, pastors should not be doing things all alone. They shouldn't be on an island. We should be involving other people in the ministry.
I talked to a pastor about a year ago, and he is in a small church out in the county. And he said, I show up during the weekend to mow the grass. I prepare the sermon. I prepare the PowerPoints and everything for the screen. I welcome people when they come in. I say goodbye to them on the way out the door. I clean the church after it's over. He said, I'm totally burned out.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, what you're doing is robbing the church body of the ability to use their giftedness in advancing the kingdom. And what he needs, to your point, even though it's a smaller church, he needs to build these leaders of leaders around him so that he's healthier as a leader and he's multiplying his life and the lives of others, which is a definition of a disciple-making leader.
Yeah.
So this is a very important conversation to have, and maybe this conversation is going to flip a light switch on that's really going to help you maximize your leadership, help you become a better leader, and help the church continue to grow.
Yeah, I really think if you back that up, like we're focusing on staff leaders because both of you guys are on staff. I was just a church member, right? At one point in time before I went into full-time ministry, I was just in the church serving and leading. The opportunities I was given as God was working in my life to oversee and to lead were very formative in me to go into ministry. So I would say, hey, my people will never do this. My people won't gravitate. If that's kind of where you're, you know, if you're a leader out there saying, hey, my people won't do this, I think sometimes we just need to cast that vision, give them a higher calling, but then equip them to do that. Because it's really good for them to get in the game of ministry.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they will do more than you think they will. Honestly, you know, I've heard that many, many times. Well, my folks won't ever do that. They won't give us an extra hour. They won't prepare. But I tell you what, they step up to vision and they step up to challenge.
Yeah.
And many times we're just keeping the bar way too low, you know, yeah, and we need to call them out. And we're going to get into how to do that. We're actually going to show you some skills and some techniques that are proven in the trenches on how to do that. But I wanted to bring Cameron into this conversation. Cameron, we're going to dive into how you have leveraged this leader of leaders for growth. But I want to just ask you, why do you think this is important, you know, from your perspective?
Right. Yeah, this is a really important role. In fact, I wanted to tag on to what y'all were saying, because I think another thing a lot of people will say is, well, I'm just not there yet. Right. I don't need a leader of leaders. I mean, we're just not that big of a church. And honestly, my ministry is pretty manageable at this point. But man, I would argue now being in the position that I'm in, and I'm about to talk about the pinch that I felt that mm-hmm. moved me into this. Mm-hmm. Okay, I need a leader of leaders role. Man, I wish I would have had this way before that.
Yeah.
Because I think you can begin to start this early on in your ministry and then begin to move forward. Now you have a model, you have a system, you've been working for years. And then when you get to the point where you're like, man, I need this, well, you've got it. I mean, you've got a well-oiled machine. And so really for me, what really drove me to this point of needing a leader of leaders is honestly, you get to the point where you're going, okay, ministry's outpacing me. I remember people, they were coming to me face-to-face going, Cameron, I've texted you, I've called you, I've reached out to you multiple times, and dude, you ghosted me. For all y'all don't know who what ghosted means, it means that you didn't pick up the phone, and you didn't text me back, right? That's what the new age people say these days. You ghosted me. There you go, Craig.
I brought you up to speed. Hey, thank you. I now feel relevant, you know, all of a sudden. Yeah.
Yeah. And it just gets to the point where you're like, you know what, man, I am really getting to the point where I don't even know all my leaders anymore, right? So for me,
right.
At that point, we're around 24 connect groups. We have at that point, we had 1,100 people coming in and through our connect groups in any given month. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of people for one guy to be able to understand what are all the complexities of group life. And I thought I could do it, but it was kind of that Jethro and Moses scenario where I'm going, all right, like Glenn Underhill, the spiritual development pastor, is going, hey, Cam, like you are getting to the point where you're not going to be able to really begin to care for all these people.
Right.
You could do a few, but you can't do all of these. And so then that's when I began to go, okay, I need men. Right. I need leaders who could take on what I'm doing for these group leaders and begin to multiply that to oversee groups of team leaders.
Yeah.
Like what you're saying.
And you know, there's a term here that I want to go ahead and introduce, and that is the term of span of care. Mm. You know, when I talk to lots of church consultants and things like that, you know, they're in kind of that space. They talk a lot about span of care, and that what actually hinders churches from growing is that one person is trying to oversee way too many people. Mm-hmm. And so that term, so it would be great for you, pastor, that's listening to this, to ask yourself the question, what is the span of care in my church? Am I trying to oversee 11 people or 12 people or 20 people? Maybe I'm the lid here.
Yeah.
Maybe the reason why we can't move forward is because I'm holding on to too many mm-hmm. things. And there may be an internal challenge that leaders go, you know, I like doing all this stuff, you know, or I feel, you know, this is my job, you know, or I, you know, this is where I get my strokes, or you know, I don't mean that in a negative pejorative way, but just, you know, this is where I feel good when I'm doing these things. But actually those things can hinder the growth and effectiveness of the church, because, you know, you're actually hindering other people from finding a place to play and other people using their gifts. And so we need to get span of care in a reasonable form. And let me just say, at our staff, we about, I don't know, I guess it was maybe 7 years ago, so we went through a pretty significant reorganization. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, it was kind of painful, but nevertheless, it was necessary. And part of that was we had like one person overseeing a whole long list of people, and we said, "Hey, we can't do that. We have to reorganize our span of care, where now you can only reasonably, you know, oversee and care for maybe five at the max, six maybe." You know, so we really try to reduce that. So I think that's an important concept to think about, what is a span of care for you as a leader and for those underneath you.
Yeah. And let's acknowledge that for the pastor listening right now, that is a big pivot, right? That's let's just acknowledge that's a big shift to go, okay, I've been doing the work and that felt great. And everyone needed me and everyone was coming to me. And man, it felt good because man, I felt like I was, man, I'm in charge.
Yeah.
And all of them are coming. So it keeps me busy. I'm doing things that matters from what I see in my current perspective. And then I begin to do the work through others. And then you go, okay, well, what do I do? I mean, everyone else is doing the work now. So what's my role? And let me tell you, as someone who now has been doing this for the last few years, there's a very special thing that happens when you empower leader of leaders to do the work, because then you pull back and now your work is really, you're setting direction and alignment. And here's the best thing I get to do every week is I get to actually spend extended time in prayer for my leaders. That's a 24-hour on the job role that I get to do for my leaders. And now I hear leaders coming back to me going, man, Cam, this is the best thing ever. man, I got to sit down with these team leaders and I'm seeing progress made as I'm, you know, and so it really changes the framework for you to go, wow, okay, instead of me doing all the work and keeping it to myself, now I'm bringing other leaders in on this to see the beauty of this, to see the beauty of ministry. And now these guys are potentially guys that could move up and become department leaders, organizational leaders. So that this is a very important piece that really I think a lot of churches are missing.
You know, Cam, I think you bring up a really good point here that many times you being in the weeds of the work actually prevents you from the important work of visioneering, prayer, development, problem solving, because you can only do so much. You know, every person has a certain amount of bandwidth. And so if you're constantly, you know, with your hands in the day-to-day, you can't get your head up enough to see where you're going. And so that prevents the church from really moving forward. Right. And this actually helps you do that.
Yeah, and I think you bring out a great point too, Cam. This is actually worth it. Like, there's a benefit to the struggle, because if you rewind all the way, most leaders are probably like, I'm nowhere near being able to install this. And wash, or maybe my people aren't ready yet. Maybe there's an external tension. You spoke a lot about the internal tension. Maybe there's an external tension where, hey, isn't this your job, Pastor? Isn't that what we pay you to do? But if we can help reshape, reorient that vision and the purpose and call that out in people, no. Like, it's good for you to be in the game and start to shift that culture. It takes work. It's hard work to start changing a lot of ingrained church culture and perspectives. But man, I think I just want our listeners to hear that it's worth it, that it is life-giving not only to their people, but to themselves. Yeah. And so when we really, so that's really what that, you know, that I think that paints that picture. But really, how did you even begin? Like, you felt the need, you felt there's a tension there, but how did you even, like, where'd you start?
Yeah. A mentor of mine sat me down and said, okay, Cam, here's the best place to start. Is to look at what have you been doing, right? What have you been doing for these leaders? How have you been caring for them? How have you been developing them? And begin to just write that out. Go, man, these are the things I'm doing. Because sometimes we don't know how to bring up other leaders underneath this because we really don't even know how to articulate what we're doing. Yeah. And so that was hard because I was like, man, I don't know. A lot of this is intuitive to me. I mean, that's part of the calling and the nature of the role I'm in. And so I just began to kind of jot down, this is what it would look like to coach leaders and just developed a list, and I began to kind of really define what would be a coach. You know, what would be this leader of leaders, someone who could begin to coach leaders, care for them. And so I thought about kind of this idea of what is the characteristics of a coach. That's what we call them here, the leader of leaders that take care of our group leaders. And we just said, man, what would be some characteristics of those people? So thinking through, you know, man, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, thinking about some of the things in Titus and Timothy, and then kind of think about, okay, what are the competencies? You know, what do we want a coach to do? And so we begin to kind of lay those things out, because I think you have to start with the end in mind. Mm-hmm. Because if you just start pulling people out of your congregation and out of your groups, man, you're gonna really hate yourself because you don't have the end in mind, and so you're gonna have people in leadership you don't want there.
Yeah, they're gonna get frustrated too because you're trying to build the plane while it's in the air, so to speak. And so having a clear idea of what you're trying to train them to do is really super smart. Let me just back up for just a second before we continue down this road and just say, in your current context, you had X number of group leader. Can you just explain kind of what life was like before you went to leaders? And then we're going to talk about how you made them and then how life has changed. All right.
So sounds good.
Just kind of paint the picture a little bit about where were you before and what was that pressure point?
Yeah. So we were right around about 24 Connect groups meeting. These are mid-sized groups on our campus, so they can average anywhere from 25 to 30 people. In total, we had in our group system, I mean, anywhere from 1,000 to 1,100 people coming through in groups on any given month. And so, that's a lot of people coming in. There's a lot of people that you're having to take care of. And then out of that, of course, you have 24 groups. You got 24 leaders. And then underneath them, they've got other leaders that are serving as teachers and coordinators and all that. So really, you begin to see this picture of, man, there's a lot for one person. I was the only person running around. I mean, you see me on Sunday. I would run around our buildings, you know, and people are like, man, you're like the Flash. You know, there would be
a problem. Look how fast he's moving. We need to give him a raise.
Yeah. I mean, someone once told me, as long as you're moving fast, people think you're working.
Yeah, so that's right.
Maybe I was just moving fast to move fast. Yeah. But anyways, so I would just run around because we would have something go down in one group, or, hey, someone needed my help over here, or, hey, we had a teacher go down over here, and so I was running over that way. And I'm young, so I'm like, man, I could do this. I could totally pull this off. And I ran that play for about 2 years. And then I got to the point where I'm like, okay, man, this is not going to last. This, I am the ceiling. Like I am the, despite all the, you know, the competency and the capacity I have as a leader, I am very limited. So I need to get people around me to begin to help me do this. And so that was really the pinch point where I'm going, okay, man, I got 24 groups. My goal, which we're about to hit, I wanted to get the 30 groups meeting on a weekly basis. So I said, if I'm going to add 6 more groups, I'm in trouble. Yeah. Because if I'm running ragged like this right now, there ain't no way we're going to add 6 groups and then still maintain, help multiply those, keep these things running smoothly.
Solve problems. Which there's a lot of them.
Lots of conflict. I mean, it's people.
Yeah.
Okay, we're in the people business. I mean, it is a so I mean, you're constantly just running around trying to solve things and you're not visioning.
You know, Cam, I remember when we would talk about groups and we were kind of stretching out our vision, saying, you know, what if we have 40 groups? What if we have 60 groups? And I remember you're just thinking, man, oh my gosh, there's no way that I could double or triple the number of groups I have
right.
and still do it all on me, you know, it all depending on me. And so that was a good exercise to think, okay, what would have to change for us to really be at that? But what would it look like? What would healthy organization look like if we did have that number?
Yeah.
What leaders would be in place? And I think that also factored into you saying, hey, something's got to change now. We can't even add 6 more groups until we make this change, much less, you know, another 20.
Yeah, and internally, I remember when you did that, I was like, man, I'm excited, you know, because as a visionary, I'm going, man, let's charge a hill and do this thing. But there's also another part of my brain going, okay, practically, Cam, what does this look like? I mean, if you had 60 groups right now, I mean, would you be able to really maintain what you got? And no, there's no way. We couldn't even multiply it because it was all dependent on me. And so that's really where we got to that pinch point of going, okay, this is where we want to go in 10 years. If this is what we want to do over the next several years, then we're going to have to make some big changes. And that starts with understanding that I am a ceiling. And I've got to get other leaders around me to help carry the weight of ministry. And so then that's really where we begin to kind of start pivoting and begin to set into place and say, okay, what would it look like? We begin to dream about what would it look like if we just started small and we just found a few leaders and start with those and just really work that system. And then over time grew that, then we could get to the point of having, you know, double, triple the size of our group ministry.
So what's been some of the biggest challenges that you faced in this process? Because this, like you said, it's a big pivot. It was an internal pivot for you at first, but now you're beginning to see the value and the benefit of it. What were some of the big challenges in the process?
Yeah, so one of the big challenges that I experienced was at some point, people are just used to coming to me.
Yeah.
Right, I get the phone calls, I get the text messages, I get the emails, I get the, hey, Cam, can we talk in the hall real quick about this? So people were coming to me constantly for all the issues going on in their group, or they're trying to think through things in their group. And I would have to constantly say, hey, okay, who's your coach? Okay, that's who your coach is. Okay, go talk to them first. And then if that doesn't work, then come to me. And having to push them back down through. And that's hard because it's been a habit of mine for so long to be the guy with all the answers, to be the guy that everyone comes to. And then to have to make the pivot and go, okay, like, man, this really stinks. And I know you're not going to like it when you're looking at me going, I need an answer, but I'm going to go, I have the answer, but they know I do, but I really need you to go through the coach. I need you to trust your coach. And what that is, as you talk about this in the book, is I'm giving my coach, my leader of leaders, credentials. I'm giving them backing. I'm giving them all the empowerment that they need by saying, I could give the answer, but my coach knows the answer. In fact, I think he's going to give you a better answer because he knows you better. So that was one of the challenges that we had walked through. And then, you know, another
one. Well, let me tap in on that. What would happen if you didn't defer them to that coach?
Why do you have to ask that question, Greg?
Because I know you know the answer to this.
You act like you knew that I actually didn't do what I'm saying right now at least a couple times, you know?
So what happened from the – what fallout would there be if you just continue to answer their question?
Yeah. Well, you lose your leader's level, right? I mean, all that, because my coaches, because I've done this before where I did answer a question and it was something a little bit bigger than probably just, hey, can you just solve this little problem? It was a conflict issue. And so I gave my response and then that leader ran off with it and then came back around to the leader of leaders and he felt like he was in the dark. And he felt disrespected. He felt like, man, you didn't include me. You told me that that's my job. and now you took my job.
Yeah, you're undercutting them.
I'm undercutting them.
Like I think, Craig, you call it dipping down. Don't dip back down. So if you're at one level of leadership, don't dip down. You have to empower them to lead, and in that transition, it can be difficult. Church members can make that, you know, speaking as a church member level, we can make things difficult to do that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. And if you do that, like you said, you undercut that leader, eventually they're disrespected. They feel like, "Well, if you want to do this job, then I'm happy to get right back to you." Yeah. And really you lose that person. And so it's very important. I just want to underscore that when you start elevating people into this role, that you constantly are affirming them, you know, and praising them and directing people to them so that they feel empowered to make those decisions. That's what you want them to do.
Yeah. And I think another challenge that I had is as you're bringing leaders up through, now you're moving people from a team leader to a leader in leaders. And we know that as you move up the scale in leadership, there's more, there's more time required. There's more responsibility. You're going to have to realign your priorities a little bit. And so I've had some coaches, some leader of leaders in the ministry that we've had to have some heart-to-heart conversations of saying, "Hey, man, I notice that you're struggling coaching your leaders, helping to really take care of your leaders. And so what is it going to take for you to do that well? Is that meaning we're going to have to back off and give you less leaders, or is that meaning we're going to have to reprioritize what you're currently doing?" Because what happens is a lot of these people that you bring up as a leader of leaders, there's a reason for that, right?
Yeah.
They're high-capacity volunteers.
Right.
They're involved in multiple facets of the church. And what's hard is they have passions that all fit in those areas, and they're going to have to start eliminating some of those in order to do this really well.
Yeah.
And so that was another challenge that we faced as well, just trying to develop out leader leaders.
You know, I found, too, that there are some people that would make great leaders of leaders. Mm-hmm. And you're like, "Hey, would you come on board? You're going to be awesome. Just what you did in your group, we just want you to teach others to do it in their group." And they're like, "I just really like doing it in my group. I don't really want to take on more responsibility. I don't really want to coach anybody else. I just want to do it myself." Have you found that?
Yeah, I want to speak into that because I think that I had to have that early on because there is a potential person that we had that is super interested in being a leader of leaders. They wanted to be a coach for groups. And you know what? They're high caliber. They have everything they could probably do to really be a great coach, but they're not fully bought into what we do as a church. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm saying. You have to start with the end in mind. Who do you want to be this leader of leaders? Because at the end of the day, I mean, they are your second hand, right? I mean, so what you're saying to them, they're communicating to the leaders. And so I remember this individual came to me and said, "Hey, I want to be a coach." And I just said, "Man, I don't think that's going to be really the option for you. But here's what we can do. Here's what we can put you in." And I'm very picky. Like that's why I'm saying you got to get real picky about, okay, here's who I want these people to be, because as much as they're the secret link, they can also be the destructive link of your ministry.
That's right.
If you don't have the right people in place. And so we're very clear about it. We don't onboard a lot of these leaders. You know, sometimes you do that with self-leaders. You bring a lot of them in at once. These I'm very slow to onboard. Not because I'm slow. I typically like to move fast, but I'm very cautious about who those people are because they really carry on the mission, the vision, the core values, everything.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. You know, those leaders of leaders stand between you and all those connect groups, mm-hmm. and they're supposed to elevate to you problems that need to be addressed and things like that, but they're also taking the communication from you down. And certainly you don't want somebody distorting that message down or hindering information from coming up. Right. So you're right. There's a high level of trust there. And I think you're wise to take it slow and wise to look to see who's proven and who's bought in philosophically, not just that they have skill. That's a good point that you mentioned there, because it can be very tempting when somebody comes and says, "I want to do this." You're like, "Oh, thank you. You're
I'm all
answer.
In.
You're the answer to my prayers," right? And then you find out they had another agenda. You know, they're trying to turn it a different direction. And sometimes that's a blind side that a leader can have. So it's a good point to say, okay, you need to really be cautious and wise and really ask the Lord to guide you in who that person needs to be.
Yeah, and I think that you really have to stop acting out of that, you know, the tyranny of the urgent. You really have to, okay, God, you can almost be more, it can be more destructive having the wrong leader in place. Give yourself some time. You know, again, we all need help. We all need to do that, but giving yourself some time. I want to kind of take a break right now, just a quick break. We've had a great discussion. What I want to come back to is, number one, like, what are some wins you've seen? But then I want to get super practical. Cam, we want to give our listeners a framework where, hey, anywhere, wherever you're serving, any church size, any of that, hey, how can I go and start working on this right now? And so let's take a break, and then we'll get right back at it.
Ministry can be lonely. Now more than ever, pastors are feeling the pressure of raising expectations among their members. Pastors are expected to be stellar preachers, effective evangelists, thoughtful counselors, courageous change agents, astute business managers, all the while steering the church to accomplish its mission. And all of this can be overwhelming at times. Wouldn't it be great to have someone in your corner, someone who understands what you're facing and can help you make the wise decisions that lead the church to make disciples of all nations? Disciple First is here to help. We can provide you with personalized coaching that will help you develop and sustain a healthy movement of multiplying disciples. Our coaching includes a free evaluation to identify your church's health and your current sticking points. Also, a roadmap for sustained health and a team of proven leaders that will give you customized counsel to help you move forward. Listen, you don't have to be alone in ministry. Let's start talking today. For more information and a free ministry evaluation, go to disciplefirst.com/coaching. That's disciplefirst.com/coaching.
All right, we're back to our conversation about Leader of Leaders with Cameron Bundy and Craig. It's been a really great conversation. I feel like there's a lot of practical things. I think people can really relate to this because, again, there's a lot of heavy lifting when it comes to ministry, and most of us are doing too much of ourselves,
right,
on our own. But Cam, we kind of left off by, you know, you talked about some challenges at implementing this, maybe some warnings and cautions, but what were some wins?
Yeah, so, you know, I think we have one of the wins in the room right now. In fact, many of y'all can't see it, but we got a guy that's watching us right now. I hope I can say that on the podcast.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But he's wearing a Red Sox hoodie over here.
Oh, my gosh.
And, man, he's a beast.
Cub fans like myself to love a Red Sox fan, it's only the act of Jesus that can do that. He breaks down the wall of hostility, right? Yeah. And he brings the two to one. And so that's how you know, because Cub fans can coexist with Red Sox fans.
We are living out the gospel right now, because I'm a Rangers fan, and so
there you go.
The dividing wall of hostility has been torn down by Jesus Christ. Yeah. Anyway, so but he's in the room, and you know, he's actually here in this moment we're recording this upcoming Sunday. He's launching a brand new group with some guys.
Well, there you go.
Out of an existing group. And their coach has been working on this for a while. And what's been really cool is watching them all play this out over the last several weeks. And we're moving up to multiplication time for this group. And it's exciting to watch the coach get giddy. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know how you feel when you multiply your first group or you multiply your first leader and you're just excited and you know, you're just like
having a baby.
Man, I'm hyped up on Mountain Dew right now. Hopefully we can, Mountain Dew. Anyways, you just start getting excited, and watching him get excited gets me excited.
Yeah.
And that's a win, you know, where you're going, okay, now he sees what multiplication looks like. He sees what leadership development looks like. He understands the mission, the vision. He's living it, right? He no longer goes, well, that's the mission statement on the wall, and those are our core values. He's embodied that through this whole thing. So watching him, watching other coaches in our ministry come to me, and we grab, you know, breakfast once a month and walk through and go, okay, man, tell me what's going on. And to hear them talk through, man, Cam, I never thought this would be this exciting. Like, this is life-giving. I never thought I could give up leading a connect group to then lead others to lead connect groups. I just didn't think that was going to happen. And to see them capture that is great. And so I think one of the wins is letting them actually developing the saints to do the work of the ministry,
right,
catch the vision for it.
Yeah, that's so good. And that becomes attractive in and of itself, right? Oh, yeah. When they get a taste of ministry, they want to keep going. And I just think it awakens giftings that they may not even know that they have. You know, some people, they don't even know they have this spiritual gift of leadership or encouragement or this kind of thing until they step into it. Mm-hmm. So it's cool to watch kind of the awakening of some gifts come to the forefront that honors the Lord and grows the church. Yeah.
And I want to add another one. I think, so that's from a leader of leaders perspective, but then I think from a department leader or even maybe an organization leader, depending on the size of your church, man, I have experienced such a great revival in my own life. Because I now have time to set apart and go, okay, man, now I can get real serious about the bigger picture of this ministry. Now when you say 50, 60 groups, I don't really shake as much because I'm going, we can do it. Man, I've been praying about it. I've been envisioning it. I've been really dreaming through and strategizing how do we do that over the next 1 to 3 to 5 to 10 years from now. And I could never do that before because now what you said earlier is I have lifted myself up out of the weeds and now I can see, oh, this is possible. We could totally do this. We've got what we need. We just need to, now I need to stay where I'm at, and then I need to let my coaches do their work and let those leaders go to work. And as we're working together as a team, now we're actually seeing a fruitful ministry. And over the last, over the last year, and we've launched the majority of those 6 groups we wanted to launch. We launched 5 of those in 1 year. That is unheard of. We've never really done that here.
Yeah.
And you could do that in your own church. Yeah. They may not look like 5, may look like 1, may look like 3, 10. I mean, I don't know what that looks like for your church, but I'm just telling you that when you do it Jesus's way, when you follow his model for ministry and life, man, he blesses that. I think his favor's on that.
Yeah, absolutely. We're super proud of the work you're doing, Cam. Yeah. You're doing a great job. And as a disciple-making leader, so thank you so much for what you're doing. So let's get super practical. What pastors listening to this podcast, what are a couple of tips that you would give them, some real practical things they could do to get started now raising up leaders of leaders?
Yeah. So I would just really look and see, you know, where is your current pinch right now? Where is that? And that may not be in group ministry. Maybe you're listening to the podcast right now and you're going, you know what? It's not really my group's ministry. Maybe it's kids, students, guest services, or, you know, maybe it's a benevolent. I don't know what that looks like for you, but just try to find out where that pinch is and recognize it. Don't ignore it. Press into that and go, okay, what would it look like if I was to go take one person and begin to develop them and train them over the next several months to then begin to help me in that role and really to empower them to be the leader of leaders over that team? And to really help those the whole team, the whole ministry begin to function, and it'll allow you to get up to begin to vision and to set direction, and to let them really do all the work on the ground level. And so that's what I would say is first try to figure out what that pinch is, because most of us have ignored it.
Yeah, the pinch you mean is I'm doing everything.
Yep.
And I'm feeling the pressure that I'm doing everything, and I'm balls are dropping, and people are upset because can't be everywhere at the same time. That's the pinch.
That's the pinch.
So that's good to listen to that. That's a signal, right? That's a light on the dashboard saying, hey, this needs to be addressed. Very good. Okay.
Yeah. So I think you would just go ahead and identify what that pinch is, and then begin to say, okay, what would that leader look like? So like I did, it could be as simple as just writing down and putting a little T-chart and say, okay, what are the characteristics and what are the competencies that this person would need? I wouldn't do more than 5. Keep it real simple. Just write those things out and just begin to, okay, this is what I'm looking for. You got to start with the end in mind and begin to, okay, right, this is the person that I want leading in this role. And then begin to really pray. Go ahead.
Let me back up one more before you move forward. When you say characteristics and competencies, can you define that a little bit more? Mm-hmm. What do you mean by competencies? What do you mean by characteristics?
Yeah, let me give you an example of just even what we did. So when we were walking through our coaches, we said, okay, from a characteristic standpoint, right, a lot of the things we were kind of highlighting were a lot of it what came from out of Titus and Timothy, partly because they are leading in a higher level within the church. So we were like, hey, you know, we do want them to be set apart and be people that are patient and self-control and tempered. And so we begin to kind of walk through. Some of those could be fruits of the Spirit, right? Some of those could be the one another's in Scripture, the Titus Timothy scriptures, and just picking out, okay, what would they need to really begin to embody to do this role well? And then in the competency, we just kind of said, okay, man, what would they need to be doing? This is their due part. And so for us, we said coaches are praying, encouraging, caring, and developing their leaders. And they have kind of individual tasks that they do to that. So we would just highlight, what are those? Well, man, take time to pray over your leaders. Yeah. That is a work in competency. We want our coaches to be able to walk into a room and lay hands on someone and pray for them. If they can't do that, then they're not going to care really well for their leaders.
Yeah, that's good.
So that's kind of what we did, is we just thought through all those pieces so that when we're onboarding people, they're very clear about what we're asking to do.
Yeah, it's character, on one side, competencies, on the other side, who you want them to be,
yep,
and what you want them to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's really good. Just a line down, vertical line down the page, be, do, character, competency, and then list off 4 to 5 of those things. Don't give them a list of 20 because that's overwhelming. Just a few that you can build some training around.
Yeah. And don't reinvent the wheel. You know, that's my problem. And I'm sure it's a lot of us, you know, those of us who are listening to this podcast, I can imagine are probably ambitious and have, you know, kind of a visionary mindset probably and have dreams of what it could be. Jesus has already laid the framework. Now just go pick from it and go, okay, man, this is what we want our leaders to really emulate. And so I just think we're always sitting around and we're just trying to grab out of thin air what we think these should be. And it's like, man, it's right here in Scripture.
Yeah, that's really good. You know, in the Disciple Making Leader book, that's a resource of Disciple First, we actually unpack what did Jesus train at the leader level. And so that may be a good resource for you to go back to and kind of dig into those passages. At least it's a good place to start.
Yeah. So I think you're doing those two things. You're beginning to identify the pinch point. You're now highlighting, okay, what do I want that leader to look like? And then I was going to say before we went into that is to pray. I mean, mm-hmm, Jesus spent quite a few hours praying, yeah, before he would select his leaders. And I think more importantly for these leaders, like we said, they're either the secret link or they are the destructive link. Mm-hmm. You better spend some time praying and asking God, okay, who are these people? Yeah. Help me to see who they are. And let me tell you, I was like, I don't need to pray. It's okay. But man, I'm telling you, when I pray and really seek the Lord, man, he helps me to really discern who those people are. And we have great leader of leaders. Mm. My God has blessed us with great men who he's brought me to and brought them to me. And we have a great working relationship. And I can't, man, outside of prayer, I mean, that is a God thing.
Yeah, you know, Jesus prayed all night before, yeah, he chose the 12. And so what a great example he gives us of the vital importance of prayer in discerning who these new leaders need to be.
Yeah, and let me say this, is that, man, don't make this a 20-second, Lord, help me see who the leaders are, okay?
Yeah.
you know, I'm not going to say that doesn't honor the Lord. I'll let you deal with that yourself, but I'm just saying taking 30 minutes out every day and going, Lord, I'm laying these names before you. God, help me to know. You only know their hearts. I don't know their hearts. Help me to know who they are and if they're really the ones that need to be leading. And that will radically transform just your life in general.
Yeah, no doubt.
But, man, it's picking leaders. So pray for them and then begin to go out and do what I call the I see in you conversations, right? Mm-hmm. So now you've identified these people, right? God's been bringing you into these people into your mind, and then you begin to sit them down over a coffee, over a breakfast or a lunch and begin to cast vision of, man, here's where our group ministry is going. And man, here's what I see in you and how, man, I really believe God has wired you to be a part of this mission and this vision for our group's ministry. And I'm telling you, it is magical, you know, because let's just be honest. How many times are people actually sitting people down and going, I see in you? A lot of the conversations are, here's what I don't see in you.
Yeah,
you're horrible.
Right.
You're not doing this right. You know, or you're just getting hammered.
Yeah.
And so for me to sit down, and even if they say no, I mean, at least I got to encourage them. But most of the time they're going, wait, I had no idea. Like, no one's ever told me that before. And so I sit down and just go, man, here's what I see in you and how that would play in this. And then I make the pitch. Man, what do you think about being a leader of leaders? What would you think about being a coach for the next year and a half, next 2 years? And let's do this thing. What if we got the 35 groups together? We could do this.
And I just really think I think some of us inside the local church members in general have been sitting on the sideline for so long, we don't think we have anything to contribute. Mm. And when a leader casts that type of vision, someone that you trust, someone you love, really calls that out in them, it is powerful. And again, Jesus was a great vision caster. Yeah. Follow me, I will make you fishers of men. He was casting vision at the beginning of his ministry to these men. It is a pivotal attribute and skill and gift that you can give your people of just calling that out. Hey, I see in you. I love that. It's super practical. And man, it really is effective too. Yeah,
it resonates. It really does. And it's part of equipping the saints for the work of ministry, yeah, which is the job of pastors and teachers. And so, man, great, great phrase. I see in you. It's not, here's what my problem I'm trying to deal with. It's very personal. You're calling that out in them. Super good stuff. So after you have that meeting with them, you cast that vision, then what's next?
Yeah, so I'm going to give you two things here because when we first started this, right, and let me just tell you, man, don't strive for perfection. strive for progress, and I struggle with that. So I wanted a perfect system to develop them, and it's going to be this robust thing. I just said, hey, look, I want you to go with me for the next 5 months. We're going to meet once a month, and I'm going to just develop you as a coach and get you ready. They're like, whoa. So I don't have to do this until like 5 months from now? I'm like, exactly. So let's walk over the next 5 months, and I'm telling you, when you get to the end of this, it's going to be great. And all we did is took Mack Lake's book, Leading Leaders, and we just walked through it together. I mean, it was that simple. I mean, I didn't reinvent a wheel. I didn't create my own curriculum. I just found something out there that looked like it was flexible. It worked for what we needed. It had character and competencies in there every time we met. So that it just was set up on the tee for me. So shout out to Mack Lake if you're listening to this. If you wanna go ahead and endorse this, we'll see what happens. But you know, I'm just saying it works. And but that's how we did it then. Now we've created a cohort style, and we've kind of created our own material that works. And we actually run our group leaders and coaches alongside that system. So as new leaders are coming in, new coaches are coming in, they're developing a relationship with these group leaders. Oh, wow. And then we launch them together.
That's beautiful.
It's, yeah. It's like, man, they've already been paired. They've already been working together. They've already got a relationship. And so all that work is done.
Yeah.
Right. They're no longer looking to me. They're now looking to the coach who's been with them through that cohort.
And again, if you look back to what life was like before you had this, yeah. None of that existed. Right. I mean, there wasn't a process for finding these new leaders. It wasn't a process for really coaching up the coaches or anything like that. So just looking back, what you've developed is something that can perpetually raise up leaders year after year after year.
And I think it's a healthy way to do it, too. It's like it's a runway of development. Instead of saying, hey, I need you to be a groups coach tomorrow. Hey, just sign up and join in, and then I'll kind of develop you on the way. I mean, you wouldn't just planes don't get off the ground immediately. They need a runway. They need to gain some speed and pick up some momentum so they can get lift. So I think it's the same way with leaders. Is I think sometimes maybe we're asking people to go further than they're really ready to go in that moment. And, man, how freeing is it as a leader, too? Like from your standpoint, to go, I have a little bit of time and I can build. And you probably see a lot through that runway, too. You're also vetting through that process, they're reconciling with, hey, do I have enough time for what you're asking me to do? What are the true expectations? Mm-hmm. And they're actually developing as a leader along the way before they're in that position.
Right.
I think it's really good.
Yeah, I mean, we even track their participation through that cohort. And so, like, even this last cohort we just did, like, there's a guy that came through, highly interested in being a group leader. He only attended 30% of the time. So that tells me right there, okay, dude, you have no commitment. You're not really bought into this thing, and that's okay. Like, we told them this is an exploratory opportunity. Like, there was no obligation on the backside, but it tells me pretty quickly, okay, you were 30% and everyone else was 70% and above. So I know very clearly where you stand, and it's a yellow flag for now until we can see your commitment level go up.
Yeah.
So it's a great training ground to begin to assess, and our coaches see it now as I sit down and go, okay, what do you think? The five guys you took through this, what do you think? And they go, yep, that guy's not ready. These people are ready. Let's roll with them.
That's so good. That's so good. Well, as a result of that, now where do we stand? Just as you see the current condition, now that you've got these coaches in place, now you've got new leaders in place, how do you feel like the ministry has benefited from all this?
Yeah, it's benefited greatly, right? I mean, you just think about even this Sunday, we're hitting the 30 group mark.
Oh, wow.
Right. And then we're on track to continue to do that, to launch at least five groups every year. And a lot of that has to do with these leader of leaders, because now I have time to pull up out of the weeds and begin to think about, okay, where are we going? And I just didn't have that before.
Yeah.
And now we're in such a great position. And now our group leaders feel loved on. They feel like they're being taken care of because they got people who are watching them. We've had even conflict over the last year. Can you believe it or not? Like, we had conflict. And I remember there's moments where I said, hey, do you want your coach to come in on this? Like, do you think it'd be, yeah, man, I want my coach here. And it changed everything.
Wow.
Right? That the coach was in the room because they felt like they had someone who was on their side advocating for them.
Yeah.
And let's just be honest, as a church member, maybe Ben, you can speak into this, but when you're in conflict and a pastor's in the room, it could kind of feel like, man, okay, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, a little principal's office action.
A little principal's office. And to have someone who's also a lay leader in the church coming alongside you and helping explain what's going on is super helpful.
Yeah.
So it's been helpful just for our leaders to feel like they have someone who's backing them up, who's supporting them. So it's not just not that we make it feel this way, but it can seem and be perceived as a top-down leadership. As much as we try to not do it that way, people just perceive it that way. But when you say, hey, I have a coach who's going to sit with you and is going to help support you and lead you and walk with you, it makes us all feel like we're one big team.
Yeah.
And now we're all pulling in one direction to accomplish a mission bigger than all of us. Mm-hmm. And that's changed the dynamic of our group ministry.
Yeah. I think that the point here that I'm kind of listening as you're talking about, hey, we added groups. There's a lot of people that add groups, right? You can go and we can add groups and we can, you know, just to pat ourselves on the back and say that we've, you know, added, but you are creating a healthy groups ministry,
right?
That is because of where we sit, because of the church dynamics, that is growing. And you do have that, but they are healthy groups. They're not just groups for group's sake. You're not just saying, hey, we've got to hit this number. You're actually creating a healthy environment for your people to develop deeper community, which again adds to the growth, which adds to the total culture, and just feeds the whole system.
Yeah.
And so I think that's something to really point out, that we're not just about adding groups for group's sake. It's really about being healthier, giving our people what they truly need to find community, to be connected to Christ, and to ultimately grow into disciples of Christ.
Yeah. Because you're thinking through, I mean, y'all talk about this a lot in this podcast, but our groups are the vehicle by which people move through a spiritual pathway.
Yeah.
And so our coaches play a big role in making sure that our group leaders are making that happen. And for a lot of churches, the groups are just a place to, man, the word's taught and there's community and that's it. But we have a higher expectation of saying, man, as a group leader, yes, you are teaching God's word. You are creating environments of fellowship and connection, but you also are helping people move through a spiritual pathway. And I think whenever you have coaches that are bought into that and everyone's looking at it and they're assessing every month where our people are, oh man.
Yeah.
It's game changer.
Yeah, and that's how a disciple-making church happens.
Yeah,
how the work is done, and if you're listening to this, it may be in the groups area that you need a leader of leaders. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully what you've heard here is really going to benefit you. But listen, maybe the pinch is in your worship ministry, or maybe your pinch is, you know, in hospital visits, or you know, it's some other spot. Listen to the pinch, lean into it. See that as a warning sign that, hey, you need to raise up additional leaders. And I love just the practical things of the character competency page, and then developing a little way to train that, and then looking and seeking out these emerging leaders and making the ask, have the sit down. I see in you, man, that's good stuff.
It's all good stuff. You got, I really have enjoyed this conversation. Number one, Cam, thank you for what you do here.
Absolutely.
At Cross Creek. Mm-hmm. Thank you for the value that you bring to Disciple First, and the wisdom, again, not wisdom from, hey, I have everything figured out, but wisdom through actually doing the work. Mm-hmm. And I think that is super valuable, that what you bring to our organization, what you bring to the ministers we serve. And again, Craig, too, thank you for everything you do. As a listener, I just want to say, hey, check the show notes of this episode. We're going to have a little download for you that kind of breaks down Cam's framework. And again, that framework is not just for a group's ministry. It can be for any leader of leaders pinch point that you have. So download that, check it out. Hopefully that's helpful. And again, there's other ways that you can connect with Disciple First in the show notes. So we'd love to hear from you, and thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Disciple Making Leader podcast, brought to you by Disciple First. We hope today's episode has been both helpful and challenging in your journey to becoming a disciple making leader. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to make sure you hear the next episode. And if you have a moment, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave a review and share this podcast with your friends. Until next time, keep making Jesus the model for your life and ministry.